Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
It's Saturday, July 18th, and boy, is it a hot one. I've spent most of the afternoon out weed eating in my yard, but I had to come in 5 o'clock Pacific time this afternoon to interview a very special guest. Her name is Nikita Duncan, and she originally comes from Canada, so she lives in Colorado now. And I really enjoyed what she had to say about her artistic impetus, if you will. And I quote, she says, "Most of my art represents the energy, feelings, and non-visual aspects of people and events. However, I also enjoy making more realistic work, such as landscapes and figures. Painting is usually enjoyable, but occasionally, because of a piece's meaning or purpose, tension occurs. There are times I find myself working against my own aesthetic because I'd rather a painting be truthful than something that's simply nice to look at. The tension arising from the denial of my visual preferences often challenges me to evolve my artistic abilities and elicits powerful psychological responses from myself and viewers." I'm wondering how many artists, other artists may actually echo those feelings. But anyway, suffice to say, Nikita Duncan is definitely channeling something very special with her art. And I connected with her because she actually asked me if she could paint my orgasm. Now, I have to tell you, getting a request like that, I was like, what? Are you going to come watch me masturbate or something? I really couldn't figure out what this girl was talking about. But it actually turned out to be a telephone interview, and she asked me a lot of really detailed questions. So it was very personal. I think we were on the phone for a good hour and a half. And went pretty well around the world, because for those of you who've been listening to me or reading any of my stuff for any length of time, you know that an orgasm is not just an orgasm for me. It's a spiritual journey. But anyway, she did, in fact, paint my orgasm. It's a beautiful, lovely photo. I sent it out in this month's newsletter. For those of you who are subscribing to the Wealthy Woodpecker, you should have already gotten that in your inbox. And if you don't have the Wealthy Pucker, the Wealthy Woodpecker, if you're not subscribed to that right now, you can get it. All you got to do is go to www.sexwithoutshame.com. That's sexwithoutshame.com. Just click on the little button for the newsletter, and you can sign up. And I'm thinking if you go over to my blog on the website, sexwithoutshame.com, you will also find that I have posted the archives. So you can go back and look at past issues. So if you didn't get today's, so that you can see Nikita's art, that's one way. Here's another way. You can actually just go over to her blog spot. And I'm going to Twitter that for you because it's much easier. So just go over to twitter.com/Veronica Monet, that's M-O-N-E-T, .com. I'm sorry, just Veronica Monet. I guess just start following me, and then you'll get what I'm Twittering to you today. Okay? So anyway, without further ado, I'm going to introduce Nikita, who's been very patiently standing by. Nikita, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for the lovely introduction. It's such a pleasure to be talking with you right now.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of yours too. So, as a matter of fact, should we tell people we're actually thinking about writing a book about orgasms together?
Yes, yes. And in fact, I just read your most recent book, Sex Secrets of an Escort, and I thought it was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, it's a self-help book, so it's not as artistic and prosaic as what you create for the world, but I'm really glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was really well-rounded, and you had a lot of great, just really straightforward advice. I was going to ask you, though, like, what are you interested in pursuing beyond this?
be on the book about sex secrets of escorts. I got to tell you something. I never wanted to write a sex manual. I went kicking and screaming on that one. I had written a book called The Truth About Men. I wanted to write it. I thought I wasn't interested in doing a tell-all. I was like, everybody's written about their life as an escort. Whoopie-doo. I mean, you know, one escort story is the same as the next one with a few variations. And plus, I don't like the idea of, you know, telling other people's secrets. You know, I talk about some of my clients, but I usually conflate them. I put two or three clients together and act like it's one so that it's very confusing and nobody would be able to identify the person. But if you try to write a whole book about clients, it seems like you would probably run afoul of that anonymity. And at some point, somebody would probably be hurt or upset. And plus, I think it's been done. So what's the point? But I'll tell you, nobody wanted The Truth About Men. Everybody was like, oh no, we don't want escorts to tell us about gender. We don't want escorts to tell us about relationships. We don't want them to tell, you know, us about men. Just tell us about sex. So I ended up taking a good portion of my first book that I had written that never got published, The Truth About Men, and I put it in the first five chapters of that book. And then the last two sections of the book, the afterword and the conclusion, were where I got to talk about some things that were very important to me, which were, you know, like reconnecting with the goddess, the ancient goddesses, and really seeing sex as a sacred pursuit rather than it just being something about pleasure. So, not that there's anything wrong with pleasure, of course. But anyway, the in-between stuff was basically to satisfy the publisher. So, you know, I talk about how to give the best blowjob.
Yeah.
And you know, that stuff's fine, but I got to tell you, it bores the hell out of me. I'm interested in people dynamics, and I'm interested in spirituality, and those are really the things that you know, heat me up. And even if I'm doing porn or, you know, teaching a workshop where people are actually having sex with each other in my workshops, it's very much the focus is on the interpersonal and the spiritual. So anyway, that was a long way of telling you that as long as I don't have to, you know, do battle with more publishers, I want to write a book about, well, I started off calling it relationship repair. Now I'm calling it perfect passion forever formula or something like that. It's funny how as writers we're always looking for some cute little way to turn a phrase. But suffice to say, I've got a documentary coming out next month on the Women's Entertainment Network about domestic violence. And I'm going to be shifting my focus somewhat to you know, how people can problem solve without being verbally abusive to each other. So that'd probably be the next book.
I was saying, of course, that involves people becoming more in touch with themselves, you know. I think it's so interesting how much people shy away from authenticity. And something I really love about what you express and what you communicate is the importance of being genuine and true to yourself. So I think it'd be great if you did something along those lines, like what you were talking about.
Oh, thank
you.
Helping
people work through their issues. Yeah, of course. I'm a big fan, man.
Well, I'll tell you a secret, Nikita. I've been working on a book about animals now for 2 years.
Really?
But my publisher,
I didn't even know those.
My agent did not even want to look at it. He's such a...
No.
Yeah, it was like, oh, don't you have a book about sex? Don't you get pigeonholed, you know? So now I have a book about my long 27-year romance with my soulmate, and I've got a book about my white trash incestuous childhood. I've got a book about animals, and so far it's been difficult to get anybody actually interested in looking at those. It's interesting what people expect from a sex worker. They have expectations about what you're allowed to talk about and what you're not allowed to talk about. And it really just comes down to the stereotype that sex workers aren't people.
Yeah. I watched an interview of you on YouTube. It was, like, pretty heated. It was Fox News. And It was about like a high school teacher that had gotten arrested for prostitution.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was when I was debating Congressman John Kasich on Fox News from the Heartland.
And I thought it was so interesting how they dismissed what you had to say without even giving it a chance. And none of them, neither of them had ever met a prostitute. Like, they just had these preconceived notions of what you would be all about, what you had to say. I know.
To get lectured about my life as an escort from somebody who's never even been one, and that's, as you remember, I'm sure, I said, have you ever met a prostitute? Have you ever been one? And he's like, of course not. And I go, well, then how, you're not yet entitled to have an opinion.
Yeah.
He was like, yes, I am. Did you like that part where they started thumping their Bibles, and when I told them to keep religion out of the conversation, they told us the Bible had nothing to do with the religion?
Yeah. Well, Fox News really isn't the best channel to watch.
Oh, well. Yeah. No, but you know what's interesting? Now, I've been on the local Fox affiliate 5 times in the last year.
And they keep contacting you then.
Yes, they do. And they have me come out to talk about marriage, divorce, infidelity. So it's actually, they've been actually very, very nice to me. But that's a local affiliate. That's not the big network.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you've ever watched the local affiliates. They tend to be a little more moderate, whereas Fox, you know, is very much usually trying to preach the Republican religious right conservative platform.
Well, you know, there's this wonderful quote. I'm not sure if you've heard it. It's from Gene Simmons, you know, the lead singer of KISS.
Yes.
He said, a whore, in my estimation, has more credibility than a wife, and I'll tell you why. A wife is supposed to marry you for love, and a whore is not in it for love. She's there to service you. Now, the difference between them is a whore, before she does her work, will tell you exactly what it is. She'll tell you, blowjob, that'll cost you $75. Full disclosure is what they call it in court. A wife will tell you shit. A wife will tell you nothing. She's about to marry you. If you get divorced, she's going to take 60% of your gross tax, pre-tax dollars and try and get more. Now, before you get married, if you dare bring up the notion, by the way, let's just be completely honest with each other. What happens if we break up? She will cry and tell you, that's so unromantic. You know who's more credible? The whore. I read this quote and I was like, God, that's so true, you know?
Well, there's a lot of men who have definitely adopted that stance and, you know, they became my bread and butter. Had lots of clients who were very disillusioned after their first or second divorce and broke. And had sat down with a calculator and figured out it would be cheaper to see really expensive escorts even. I mean, you know, I was charging anywhere from $500 an hour to $5,000 a day, depending on what year it was and what client it was. But it was still cheaper for them than getting married. Especially, you know, if they're worth billions of dollars. I mean, what's even if you drop $100,000 on a particular prostitute in 1 year, it's nothing compared to trying to go through a divorce.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I think few people actually see it that way and crunch those numbers. I think few people actually sit down and crunch those numbers.
Well, you know, I think human beings are illogical, very emotional. I don't think they're as intelligent as they like to think they are. I'm not even convinced they're the smartest animal on this planet. But that, you know, putting that aside, on who do I think is the smartest? I'd probably say the bonobo is smarter than the human.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that the animal that is the focus of your book on animals?
Yeah.
Bonobos? Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, it's my personal relationships with animals. So it starts off with a two-legged cat that I met when I was 4 years old. And you notice right away, the first thing you'll notice when I talk about animals is I talk about them different than most people. I met a cat. I actually think that people and animals are, you know, they're all sentient beings, so I just don't make a distinction. And I guess that's a little more aligned with some, not all, but some Native American concepts where it's all my relations. Everything has a spirit. So I met this two-legged cat when I was 4 years old, and I was struck with its courage and integrity and loyalty. It really stood out as having way more character than any of the adults in my world at that time.
Interesting.
So,
what happened to the cat?
Well, the cat was the only little beacon of light that was in my world at that particular point when I was four. It was my friend. It was my teacher. I mean, you know, when I was trying to pattern myself after someone that I would admire and want to act like, it was that cat, not my parents. But, you know, I came from a family of pedophiles, so.
Yes, I was going to ask, it seems like you overcame a lot of negativity in your own life.
Yes, an incredibly negative childhood. It really was. It was 18 years of absolute sheer, utter hell. And I contemplated suicide from age 11 to age 15 when I discovered drugs and alcohol. And, you know, thank God there were drugs and alcohol or I'd be dead. I would have committed suicide a long time ago. But they gave me a reason to live. And I ripped and roared on that for about 10 years until I got sober. And thank God I got sober because I'd be dead from the drugs and the alcohol. But, you know, everything happens when it's... It can, anyway. You know, if you're looking for opportunities and you look at life as a spiritual journey, I think things happen for a reason and in the right time and hopefully for our best, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it reminds me of, I had a TV show, a little community access TV show back in the 80s, and I remember this man, this is when AIDS was brand new and there were no drugs to keep you alive, you know.
Yeah.
People died. People died very, very quickly from AIDS. And I met this man who had AIDS and who was traveling around talking about it. And he looked me straight in the face and he said, "It's the best thing that's ever happened to me." And I was dumbfounded. I was like, how could you possibly think AIDS was the best thing that ever happened to you? But he explained to me that before AIDS, he was very much a selfish person whose life was very small. And AIDS had turned him into this public speaker who was about helping other people. And that had given his life meaning. So I think, you know, we can look at things as negatives or we can look at them as the thing that shapes us and gives us character.
I totally agree with that.
Anyway, you're doing a great job of interviewing me, Nikita, but let me ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
How old were you when you moved from Canada to Colorado?
Sorry, when?
How old were you when you moved from Canada?
Oh, how old was I? Yes, I was 8 years old, so it's been a while.
8 years old when you moved from Colorado to Canada. Okay. I mean, from Canada to Colorado.
Yeah, and now I'm actually in San Francisco, and I moved here.
Oh, so you just, you know, that's what everybody just does cell phones nowadays. They don't have landlines, so you don't have any idea where people are from because everybody's got all these different area codes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a Colorado area code, but you're living in San Fran.
Yep.
And
I can see right now, actually. I can see.
So what did you start off painting before you started off into this orgasm thing?
Well, actually, I was still in college, and I was mostly just taking classes and painting whatever was assigned to us, you know, and I got pretty bored of that pretty quickly. You know, I was doing some landscape painting, some portraits, and just still lifes, which are, I mean, some people... totally disagree with me, but I think they're so boring. I can't stand them. So I really wanted to do something that was challenging and interesting to me. And I also took psychology as a major, so I wanted to fuse the two together and ended up with orgasm.
Was that your, like, I don't know if you have an undergraduate degree or a graduate degree?
Yeah. Undergraduate. I did a double degree, I guess.
Did you introduce the concept of painting orgasms while you were still in school?
Yep. Yeah, I did.
And what did your instructors think?
you know, a few eyebrows were raised in class, and they're going to paint what, you know? But people just kind of stood back and were like, oh, let's see what you can do, you know? And it turned out to be a very, very interesting. It's been going on for about 2 years now.
So while you were still in college, who would you interview?
I started off by interviewing my friends and just, you know, using them as kind of my guinea pigs, you know, just sitting down, asking them, like, what kind of, you know, questions could I ask? And then we'd talk, and then I'd interview them, and then I wanted to interview people who I knew would give me really honest feedback.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of branched off, and the more people heard about it, the more interviews I got. People would contact me, and, you know, I heard about your project, I'd love to be a part of it. So I started interviewing complete strangers, people of all different ages, ethnicities, religions, backgrounds, everything, and it was great.
Wow. So, after you did the interview, how do you find your direction? I know, you know, since you interviewed me, I know one of the things that you did was you asked questions about colors. You know, what colors did I hate? What colors did I like? But I'm just wondering, what actually happens inside of you when you get ready to paint somebody's orgasm?
Well, it really depends on who I'm talking to, because some people, you know, you need to take a different approach to their portrait in the way that you might not prepare. If someone's really, like, impulsive, maybe I won't even think about it at all. You know, I'll just kind of glance at their interview. You know, I interview people usually in person, you know, everyone except for maybe a couple people. And I'll have a memory of what their body language was like, what kind of person they are, and then I'll just go and paint, you know, I won't even think about it. Whereas some people, they're so rigid, you know, and they have routines, and they plan, and they prepare, and they're very by the book, so I'll give a lot of thought to what their painting should look like, and maybe I'll do a sketch on the canvas and kind of ponder it for a while and come back to it like a week later.
So you kind of almost challenge that person's personality, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Wow. So I'm over at your website right now and obviously looking at the beautiful painting that you put up of my orgasm. But now how would I navigate over to see other orgasms?
You click. On the sides, there's little arrows. You click to go to the right or, like, the left. You go forward or back. And, I mean, it shows up on most computers that way. Sometimes you have to actually click on the image if you want to move, like, down a few. You can go to the right and just scroll down.
So
there's 37 on the website right now.
There's 37 paintings on the website?
Yeah.
So if I just click on June, it's got four entries. Are there going to be four paintings there?
Oh, are you on my blog or on my website?
I'm on the blog, so you know what?
Ah.
Let's go over to, let's tell everybody, and they can follow along with us. By the way, listeners, this is live. I'm not going to be live for the next 2 weeks because I'm going on a tour up to the Pacific Northwest, but don't worry, the Shame-Free Zone will still be here, and you can hear some very interesting interviews that I did about infidelity and sex addiction and whatnot, but they are pre-records. But today's live, and you could call in and talk to Nikita Duncan about her orgasmic art, or you can ask me about my next book. That toll-free number is 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And all joking aside, the Shame-Free Zone is always open for your calls about anything. Especially if you're dying to share a secret, maybe, something that you can't tell anybody else, this is a safe place to do it anonymously. Anyway, let's follow along and find out where is your website? So it would be...
If you go to view my profile,
www.
Okay, you could just go to directly to it. It's just www.nikitauncan.com.
So it's www.nikitauncan.com.
Yeah.
Okay. And are we going to find a lot of orgasmic art over here?
Yeah, you sure will. Yours is in the second row, actually. You'll probably recognize it right away.
Have you ever painted your own orgasm?
Yeah, actually, it was the first one I did. I was kind of rebelling against an assignment we had in class, you know, paint a self-portrait, you know, groan up. And I was, like, looking at the canvas, and I was like, who am I, you know, and, like, cup just, you know, kind of came out, and I was like, I'm an orgasm. You know, that's how it started.
Wow. So when you were doing a self-portrait, you came out as an orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, Picasso's got nothing on you, honey. Now, I am looking at, this is a beautiful website, by the way, for those of you who are listening, go over to NikitaDuncan.com. If you're following me on Twitter, I am going to put it up there right now, and just go over to Twitter.com/Veronica Monet, and it's up there right now. Okay, but beautiful, beautiful art. Now, I'm looking at one. It's the very first painting on the top row.
Okay.
And there is an object, and I know you abstract artists are probably going to tell me I'm full of it, but there's an object in the lower right corner that looks very much like a cervix.
Okay. Would you move your cursor over the painting, over the image?
Yes.
Does it say your orgasm?
Because what?
Does it say Nina's orgasm on it, on the title at the top?
Huh. It's not. I see something changing colors, but I don't see any letters coming up.
Oh, okay.
So maybe I'll just click on it and let it bring it up. It is Nina's orgasm.
Okay. So, yeah, that is the shape of the cervix, actually.
It is. Oh, wow. But it's not your orgasm.
No. I wanted to paint one every single year and just kind of keep track of how things were changing, you know, annually. It's just kind of like checking in and how am I energy doing this year, you know. And I thought it'd be really interesting to see decades of, you know, of portraiture in this way. It's kind of like a very intimate, almost like a diary.
Well, you really get lost in these paintings. Really get lost in them. And again, listeners, if go over to NikitaDuncan.com. Beautiful, beautiful art. Aaron's orgasm.
Yeah. And I guess you can tell he's got two in there. Like
they kind of look like splurge. But it looks like something you'd find in a porn shop.
Yeah, the whole point is to like give people, you know, more meaning. You know, a lot of people don't like abstract art because it doesn't mean anything to them. They just think it's arrogant, or they think the artist doesn't have any talent. You know, but I wanted to do something. But there was actually a visual language corresponding with words.
I was just going to say, it's like you're capturing energy and physicality at the same time.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, because, I mean, and it's interesting. So it kind of looks like ejaculate, and it kind of looks like maybe some testicles at the bottom. I'm not real sure. But then it also looks like the sky and the ocean.
Yeah. For him, I went for sort of a submerged kind of feeling because he kind of lost his hearing towards the end of the experience, and he was just, it was very intense, you know, that feeling that you get when you kind of plunge into water.
Wow. And Cain, that, now this is a very different, does Cain do Tantra?
He is definitely familiar with it.
Because I'm seeing that snake coiled at the bottom, and that is very much like Kundalini energy.
Yep. If you read his, you would probably recognize some kind of Tantra elements, you know, in there. He's actually a good friend of mine, and I mean, I'm not sure if you notice in there, the colors are not as bright as the first two.
No, they're not.
No, because he feels like he's not fully in the moment. And what I notice throughout these paintings is like the more someone is lets go in the moment, the brighter the colors are. Like the more they're distracted, you know, or they're analyzing, or just the more anxiety they have, the more dull the colors are. So for him, you know, he's very in touch with himself sexually, but he's in a situation where he cannot fully express himself. You know, like he's married and he's afraid he's to have more children, you know, so
right.
He has anxiety, you know, about ejaculating and having an orgasm, and
can't
really fully enjoy it or needed to
sexually. He's a little more controlled, huh?
Yeah, definitely. And you can see it, there's like kind of these loops, you know, there's three loops, bottom right, top middle, and then sort of up on the left side, kind of pulling him back in. You know, it's like, don't get too far out there, don't get carried away. bring you back into the canvas here.
That's very interesting.
Yours. Oh, you're next.
Yes, I am. Now look at mine. Tell the listeners what is this saying?
This says pleasure is pretty central.
My God, I mean the Kundalini thing looks like I've taken up my whole personhood.
Yeah, but I mean it's for me yours is, and I wish you could see it right now in front of you because the colors aren't quite as vibrant as they are in person.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you know, my colors don't look too terribly vibrant either.
They are, though, they are. I assure you they're... But there's no angles in your painting at all, really, except for the bottom right, like just a couple angles. But everything flows pretty well together. Like, there's really no contradiction in your painting. Everything's working with everything else. And that's the way you are. You've got good, I guess I would say flow, you know?
Thank you.
You're very in touch with yourself, and you have the ability to surrender yourself to the moment.
And which I'm very grateful for, and I feel pretty integrated, too. Other people have a lot of cognitive dissonance around me because they don't see integration, they see contradictions, but for me it's really quite integrated. What about the light colors up at the top? It looks like sky to me, like the orgasm is reaching up into sky, but I'm just wondering, or was this supposed to be underwater?
Not necessarily. It's very intense, and I felt like doing the shading on both sides gave that feeling of like kind of a nice pressure, you know, on the outside of the more central, you know, spiral. And the light colors at the top were supposed to kind of signify this state that you reached, this kind of pure energy, which was like the white at the top. And so all of this pressure and coming from the outside, also this kind of green coming from the bottom up, is all contributing to this sort of pure state at the top that you're achieving. Right where the spiral ends in the center, where there's like two blue lines meeting in the middle, that's where everything kind of culminates. And then shoot out of there, it comes like the white.
You know, it seems to me that you are far more conscious of your creative process than a lot of artists, but you're the art student. You tell me, is that true, or is this pretty typical for artists to be this, you know, I mean, because a lot of times artists don't even want to talk about their art.
I actually get really annoyed when most people talk about their art. I don't want to make any enemies, but it's just really annoying, and I think part of why I pursued something like this that is so, like, complex is because of that. It's almost a reaction to that. It's like, can't there be more, you know, thought behind this? It can be nice as a therapy to just paint, you know, but I wanted to paint, you know, just really make it something. Almost treat it as like a tool for achieving something else, a medium for achieving something else.
Well, yeah, and for you, the art is very much about, as you had said, energy, feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Your personality is a lot more, bubbly, ebullient. A lot of times artists can kind of get caught up in, they remind me of people who are way into fashion. art and fashion, right? It's always a bid for some ego stroking or trying to position yourself socially. It's interesting to me the way some people can get off on that. But your art seems alive to me and dynamic and at the same time, you're revolutionary, you're very professional, and yet it's approachable and down to earth on some level.
Thank you so much. That's the whole idea, is to be inclusive. A lot of people, you know, they are stroking their egos. And I really wanted to leave that aside. I feel like to really get anywhere, you'd have to just kind of put that down and be like, what can we do? And I thought it would be great to include all these different perspectives and make it more of a learning activity, which I think it is. I mean, when I first started, I was, you know, I wasn't just taking notes on what I could paint here. I was taking notes for myself, like, oh, that's interesting. What is that? I had to, like, stop and look stuff up. I ask people to explain.
This is very interesting now. I have found a painting that has a face in it.
Oh, which one?
This would be Arielle's Orgasm.
Yes! Oh, how funny. I was just going to talk about her because she was polyamorous. And I was like, you're poly what? I don't know what that is. And we must have talked for about 4 hours about, like, polyamory and, like, all these different kind of relationships that people could have. And
right.
Her first relationship were with a guy and a girl simultaneously. And she's actually pretty young. So she hasn't really had a lot of experience after that. But the way she talked about it was so fascinating. And in here, there's not just the face. There's kind of a figure of a person.
I see that. You've actually got a picture of a person's body that looks like they're kind of falling. You can see their legs and an arm and breasts.
Yep, yep. And that's her. It's all her.
This is kind of a departure from the other art form that you've been, you know what I mean? Because everything else has been exceedingly abstract. And then all of a sudden you've got some literal representation here. And I'm just wondering, why is this one different?
This one is different because she feels like, you know, she's inside of this vessel and she's like pressing on it and trying to get out, you know, and she's kind of stuck in there. And that created, like, this very powerful image in my mind when I was listening to her. And I saw her doing that, and I was like, that's what it is, you know. She mentioned a lot of body parts, like she talked about her head and she talked about breathing and her muscles and, you know, what she's doing. So it was very, like, physical. And because of that, I felt it was appropriate to have more of a figurative representation, like including a person and a face and hands.
I have to say, this might be my favorite one, Nikki. I haven't seen all 54 of them or whatever, but it's really, it has a little bit of a retro feel to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's beautiful to look at, and it's also really emotional. Because it does look like she's trapped and having, and you know, experiencing pleasure. And so it kind of creates a tension for me looking at it. I don't know whether to be, sorry or happy for her.
I don't think she knows either. there's actually a woman here I think you get along with, really well. She was my former professor. She taught social constructions of sexuality, and her painting was actually the largest one I've done so far. It was 5 feet wide and 3 feet tall. It's it's actually on the same row as the one we were just looking at. It's furthest to the right. Her name is Glenda.
So, Glenda?
Yeah.
So there's John and Suzanne. I'm going to... John and Suzanne look like they've got prehistoric birds in theirs.
It's funny because they're a very, like, when I interviewed them, they were just kind of a fresh couple. Like, they just started dating. And I'm going to interview a couple probably in the next week that have been together, and they have, like, insane orgasms together. And I thought that would be a really neat progression, you know, to have in the book, just to see how, you know, things evolve.
What's going on with Glenda now? I'm over to Glenda's orgasm.
I'm sorry?
I'm looking at Glenda's orgasm.
Yeah.
She's all over the place.
Yeah. It's kind of like a chronology of her sexual experiences, because she talked about herself, which is on the left, so it's her alone masturbating, and then in the center, it's her, and her favorite experience where she was hogtied, and then on the right, it's like this chaos of an orgy, where she doesn't really know what's happening.
Wow. Well, Glenda's been around.
Yeah.
That is maybe the busiest painting yet.
Definitely. It was funny because I had it out and I was painting it, and I was like, God, this is so loud, you know, it's like so bright, and it was sitting on the wall across from me, and I was staring at it, you know, just to make sure. I was like, is this right, you know. I was reading her interview, and I was like, yes, that feels good. And then something was missing though. And I was like, oh my God, you know, the best thing about sex for her, or like her most pleasurable situation, is one where she has no control at all. And I'm sure you noticed, like, all the lines in these paintings are so, like, precise. Like, there's no sort of blending between the colors.
Yeah.
Very flat and bold and shaped. And I put the painting down on the floor, and I got up on the stool, and I took out, like, orange and green paint, and I just, like, squeezed the bottles, and, like, all the paint just went flying over the canvas. So that's all, like, the splatters and stuff, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, it gave me the biggest rush to paint that. And I was like, that must, you know, kind of be what it's like for her.
I have to ask you, Nikita, are you the first person to paint orgasms?
As far as I know, yeah.
That's very unique. Very unique. Now, I know that you've been talking to me and also Dr. Phil Zimbardo from Stanford University.
Yeah.
about this book project. Let's talk about that a little bit. First of all, what do you hope? What kind of a book? Is it going to be an art book or a psychological book? I mean, you're talking to a psychology professor, and what's your focus going to be?
Well, I could tell you what I'd like it to be, and then we can talk about how it would probably end up once it goes through the publishing process.
Right.
You know, but as of right now, you know, the title is supposed to be Orgasm, Art, and Psyche. So it's supposed to talk about art, sex, and psychology. As we all know, the brain is the biggest sex organ, right?
So you would basically have a very famous psychologist, a famous
yeah.
prostitute slash sexologist, and then yourself, an artist.
Yes, but we'd be a trio working together. And
yeah, and as you know, I'm already on board for this, but I do want to share with our listeners what your vision for this book is. Okay, go ahead.
So I'd really like, you know, Phil to kind of open up the book, talking about that. Talking about the mind and, you know, how it relates to art and sex. And then I'll be talking about how this project really evolved into, like, an exploration and an expansion of life. You know, it just, it started off as this experiment that really turned into this wonderful, wonderful way to connect with people and to connect with myself, you know. I learned so much doing this. And I really think it's important to share. A lot of people have had really positive experiences participating and reading the interviews. And then I wanted to have writing from you. And you were going to talk about how orgasms can be used in a practical way. And I was really just going to let you just elaborate in whatever way you felt most appropriate, whatever you wanted to say.
Well, I think that's the two that come up for me the most is that I think orgasms are a great way to do meditation and create a visualization. So as a an adjunct to your spiritual practice, that you use orgasms as part of that instead of putting them off in what I call the sexual ghetto, which is where people
yeah.
tend to have their sexuality. It's often this is like, you know, this ghetto that they're so ashamed of. When we pull that into the spiritual practice, it's very, very powerful. It's very liberating. And then kind of co-commitment with that is the concept of sex actually being possibly a way to pursue peace on this planet. And that's where the bonobos come in, because they are the only primate on the planet who's using sex as a substitute for violence. And so instead of being violent, they are sexual. And the rest of the primates, including man, is very sex negative, you know, and then usually links sex to domestic violence. Chimpanzees are renowned for their domestic violence. And human beings, of course, too. But, you know, and then both animals, chimpanzees and humans, have war, rape, murder, you know, very, very violent, bloody creatures. So I'm interested in, you know, we should probably just as much, maybe more DNA with the bonobo. So there's no reason the human can't become more like a bonobo and be sex positive. You know, if we can start linking our sexuality and our spirituality so that they are not disparate concepts to us, I think we may actually have a better chance of becoming a nonviolent species. So.
I completely agree with you. You know, one of the themes is just using vulnerability, as strange as it may sound to some, using vulnerability as an empowerment tool to just realize that there's such a well of strength in being vulnerable, and orgasms and sex can be such a force for healing and empowerment, and I think it's most definitely expressed in orgasm and in those other vulnerable moments that we have.
It is. I mean, the orgasmic moment is usually that moment where we experience more connection and more compassion. Depending. I mean, if you breathe into your orgasms, which is the more spiritual approach to sexuality, then you're going to find more connection. If you're somebody who holds your breath during an orgasm, then, you know, that's usually creates a more physical reaction, and it can be very shut down and kind of self-centered.
At what point do you think that, like, sex becomes healing?
Well, it has healing properties throughout. You know, if it's, we have some behaviors on this planet that we are calling sex that I frankly don't think should be called sex. I think any time you're raping another human being, we pretty well established that most rapists don't even experience an orgasm or an ejaculation. Some of them do, but a good percentage of them do not. It's just another form of violence with a sexual overlay. So it looks like sex, but it's not. I'm sorry?
It's an abuse of power.
It is. It's absolutely an abuse of power. And so we've really started moving away from calling that sex. And I think that that's important that we realize that anytime, same thing if you're abusing a child, sexually abusing a child, I think that is so much about power. However, now there are some people who seem to be uniquely attracted to children. And, you know, that's very dysfunctional for human beings, at least. So I have no tolerance for that, and I think that, you know, it may in fact be actually sexual. It may actually be a sexual orientation, which is kind of disturbing. But I still think that those kind of people have to be eliminated from society one way or the other because they're very destructive. They're very, very destructive. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, you know, some animals eat their own kind. Most animals don't, but every once in a while there's an animal out there that will eat its own kind. And that's not really good for the overall survival of the species. So,
that's interesting to consider because, I mean, I agree with you on that, and I wonder what it would be like to try and represent that visually, because I know that, you know, sometimes when I was painting, it was like, it was really hard for me because I wasn't at all attracted to what the person had said, you know, so it was really like such a challenge to try and get myself to think of how.
So specifically what, you would be interested in painting what?
What I would want to paint, or?
Oh, no, you said you wonder what that would be like to paint. And
oh, yeah, like how a person would talk about that moment. If they, like a pedophile had an orgasm, how would I show that, you know? I haven't interviewed someone like that. And
someone like what? I'm confused.
Someone who was in a situation where they were, like, abusing someone.
Well, yeah, that could be a very disturbing journey for you, Nikita.
Yeah, you know, I think that I'm not even sure.
Now, you know, something that I think would perhaps be less objectionable for yourself and your fans might be to interview somebody who's a top in BDSM. Have you interviewed anybody like that?
Have I interviewed someone like what thing?
Somebody who'd be a top or a dominatrix or the dominant in a BDSM situation?
I've not done that yet. I was joking with my friend. I was like, yeah, but I think they're all tied up, you know. But I did.
Ha ha!
Yeah, right. But I did interview someone who was on the receiving end of kind of a sexual abduction, actually. And it was the most strangely captivating story I'd ever heard. I'm not sure if you're still on my website there, but it's on the 1, 2, 3, 4th row down on the left side. Again, it's broken up into two parts. It's also on my blog. It's Joe's Orgasm, and it's basically a story he was 16, so it's the story of his youth.
He was how old?
He was 16.
16?
16, so he's recalling an experience from almost, 50 years ago.
Wow.
It's incredible.
And
he actually, he was hitchhiking on the side of the road. He was right by the Golden Gate Bridge. This was in, the 60s, and he was hitchhiking. And, he got picked up by this guy who was like, oh, you want to drive my car? And he's like, yeah, because his license had just gotten suspended for drag races.
Uh-huh.
And the guy started hitting on him, and he didn't know what to do. And so he slowly, kind of got used to it, and it let it happen. And in the end, he had an orgasm, that was, he said, the best one he'd ever had, ever. In, the next 6 years of his sexual life. That was the best one.
That was the sexual piece for him, was... Now, did he perceive this as a seduction or a rape?
A seduction. That's how he ended up perceiving it. And he said that because he thought his ego was, he had to see it that way. That's what he said, because his ego was not fragile, but his ego was maybe too big that he couldn't see it in any other way. It was a seduction for him.
Yeah. Well, I think we all get, we're allowed to self-define our experiences. Nobody else was there. We're there, us and the other person. So it sounds disturbing at first, I would hope that he's had that many years to figure out how he feels about it, so it would seem respectful to honor his perception about the situation,
Definitely.
Unless something, if I'm talking to somebody who is like, and then they hit me over the head with a board, somebody would say, oh, no, I enjoyed being molested when I was 5, but then when I told my mother why there was blood in my pants, the person who raped me hit me over the head with a board and knocked me out. But it was a positive experience. When I hear stories like that, I'm like, I don't think so. I think there might be some denial at work there,
Yeah. Yep.
But if you,
the thing is, I had to honor their viewpoint. It couldn't be
sure.
My viewpoint. I had to think of it in that way.
This hitchhiking situation, this guy did not pull out a knife or a gun, right?
No.
Yeah.
He got out before, it got any further, I guess. So I'm curious, what is your upcoming documentary going to be discussing? Anything specifically?
Well, it's going to be talking about the fact that women are also domestic violence perpetrators. That we're kind of in denial about that as a society, and that we need to start addressing that. I don't want to lose the really important fact that men are bigger than women and tend to, if a man and a woman go at it, she's probably going to go to the hospital even if she was also being a perpetrator. So that's real important that we keep that. It's real important also to keep, the fact that women have been subjugated and abused and oppressed over the years, and so it's really easy for men to come in and gain enormous power over the female psyche. And I don't want to lose that or batter women's syndrome. So this is a very delicate conversation that takes quite a bit of finesse to navigate. But I do think it's very important because about 70% of the women who, leave domestic violence situations with their children go on to abuse their children.
Wow.
So we really...
That's huge.
It's very huge, and it's very disturbing, and we can't continue. Even if we don't care about the men that are getting abused, and there are a small percentage of men who are being abused, sometimes even murdered by the women in their lives, we do have to at least care for the children, and we're, like as not, giving these violent females custody of the children because the male was also violent. So I want to shift the paradigm so we can start having conversations about family dysfunction and family violence and stop talking about it as if it's a situation where if you have a penis, you're the perpetrator, and if you have a vagina, you're the victim. Is that interesting? We put the P's with the P's and the V's with the V's. I don't have a vagina. You're a victim. V for me. I get it. Anyway, we're going to actually have to stop there because we run out of time. You are so much fun. I'm really looking forward to working on this book with you.
Yes, and, thank you.
And one more time, listeners, go to NikitaDuncan.com. This woman is a very talented artist, and I think you will really enjoy looking at what I think, I believe, is the only place in the world you can look at paintings of orgasms. Thank you, Nikita.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a wonderful evening. Sounds great. Take care.
You too, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Yeah.